Hello and welcome to the Responsible Management Podcast from the School of Management at the University of Bradford. My name is David Spicer. I'm the Director of Business and Community Engagement here at the University of Bradford. Welcome to this special episode of the podcast where I'm delighted to be able to talk to Meryl Olgers, who's Director of People and Culture for Universal Music Group based in the Netherlands. Meryl's also an alumnus of the MSc Human Resource Management Programme. She's with me today because she's giving our 60th anniversary lecture here at the School of Management, where Meryl's going to be talking about people as the core of responsible management. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and get Meryl's insights and thoughts on that idea. So perhaps to start, Meryl, you tell us a little bit about, well, what do you mean? Why are people the core of responsible management?
Sure, happy to. I think for me, responsible management is a philosophy that guides our actions and is based on the principles. So it's largely based on our personal credibility. How do we see the world and how do we translate responsible management into actions in the workplace, but also in our personal lives? And that shapes the culture of an organization.
So it's about that work-life interface. I'm avoiding the word balance, I guess, as kind of part and parcel of that. It's about how we translate values between the workplace and our kind of home environment. Is that the kind of thing we're talking about?
That's the correct translation, yes. For me, absolutely, that's the key. It's about how you translate your personal values, but also how you tap into the values of an organization with your personal credibility and your ethical behavior.
Okay, so why is this important? Why should businesses care?
Well, I think for me, it's important because we see that the world around us has changed a lot. And we see the impact of social and economic events over the last few years. For example, we had the global pandemic. We see digitalization in the workplace. One thing that is very important and a current development is that we work with five different generations in the workplace at this point in time. And you see a lot of differences between those generations. And for me, as an HR professional, the key is to marry that all up and to create a cohesive and inclusive environment where all these generations and all these people can thrive despite all the social and economic developments. And so I think their responsible management is the key.
Okay, so you mentioned differences between the generations. What are the kind of issues that creates or challenges that come from that?
I think the first thing that pops up in my mind is principles. So when I look at younger generations, they really act upon their principles. A good example of that is the Yeezy brand that was a collaboration between Adidas and Kanye West. And as soon as Kanye West started to utter some of the anti-Semitic comments that he made, you saw a direct response from the audience. So they stopped buying it and Adidas dropped Kanye West immediately, or I should say yay these days. And it shows that for these generations, principles are not just things that you say, but actually things you act upon and you do, and you see an immediate effect. And what the difference is between those generations as well is the perceptions of the world at this point in time. So you see older generations that actually look at younger generations and see the spoiled generation, if I can say that. And knowing that I'm closer to the younger generation, I consider myself still part of that. But you see that they look at younger generations as a group of people that, you know, they don't want to work. So you see younger generations that continue to live with their parents rather than accept a job they don't like or accept a job where they cannot identify with the values of an organization. And that is sometimes seen as spoiled. And you see younger generations that look at older generations and say, well, you had everything in life, right? There are student loans now. There was affordable housing that you had access to. So it's those economic and social developments that create tension between these groups and how they see the world.
Yeah, there's something in that expectations of the workplace, isn't there? And the way in which we engage with work.
Yes.
That is a generational difference. And it's not right or wrong.
Correct.
It's a different of perspective. You know, I started a first career more years ago than I'm willing to say on air, if I'm honest. But, you know, and left that first career because I had a boss saying to me, I think you've got all the skills and capabilities to do this job, David. And I was like, oh, that looks like a really good job. I fancy that job. So how do I get that job? And he went, well, you do that job for 2 years and then that job for 2 years and then that job for two. And then maybe we'll think about giving you that job. And I was like, well, I'm, you know, this is, you know, 30 years ago. And I'm not serving time in that way.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there's that disconnect between well, we went through a particular way of being managed, a particular route into organizations, and actually that not, especially in the post-pandemic world, not really being what people are expecting or wanting these days.
True. And the example that you sketch, I've been subject to that as well. And that was only a couple of years ago. I entered an organization, big corporate enterprise, and they said, well, if you work really hard, then in 3 years you will do X, and then in 5 years you'll be X, and then in 10 years you'll be managing this. But it's no longer appealing. Well, certainly wasn't appealing for me neither, as I hear that was for you. But I don't think younger generations especially respond to this kind of...
So I guess it means for those of us in leadership positions in organizations, for the HR discipline, we'll get to that in a minute, I suspect. We need to think about different ways of kind of involving, engaging and interacting with those people. So that's your day to day. How do you go about this?
It still starts with being inspiring, because what we see in research is that a lot of people choose to be in a position based on the manager they have. So they like to work with their direct team, with their managers, and that is where they feel most connection and engagement with. So for me, it's about setting the example, really showing my own ethical values. Actions speak louder than words. If I say I think it's important to talk about work-life balance, then I should not be the one emailing at 10 o'clock in the evening. It's really about saying and doing what you say. Walk the walk, talk the talk.
Okay, so consistency in principles and practice.
Yes.
And being able to kind of demonstrate that for people when you're kind of with them and working with them on that kind of basis. Yeah, I absolutely get that. I kind of like that. I mean, the email's a good example, isn't it? I was in my inbox very early this morning and resisting the urge to send emails. Because you want to get it out of your inbox, but then you don't want to create the expectation. On behalf of others.
Yes.
So there's that being the person that you want other people to be. What are the other kind of principles that we need to be demonstrating?
Yeah, I think promoting ethical conduct. So have clear codes and ethics, treat people how you want to be treated, but also if something happens and people don't feel well treated, that they have an outlet and space to go, a safe space for them to go. I think that is important, and not feel threatened by those. I think what I see a lot in my daily practice is that people say, okay, yeah, there's a hotline that you can go to, but I don't think you need it. Don't say that latter bit, because it puts a boundary for people to actually access these kind of tools. And I think another key important thing is that when you make decisions, responsible leaders and responsible HR practice shows that you consider all the stakeholders and all the options. So it's not just balancing the bottom line not just looking at the bottom line, but it's balancing the interests also. How does the outside world perceive some of the decision making? A really interesting example of this, it was in a paper the other week. I saw a huge advertisement of Shell, the oil corporation, and it said, we invest in green energy. And it was a one-page advertisement. And on the page next to it, it was a newspaper, it says, Shell is cutting 100 positions in their green division. For me, those don't marry up, right? So it's, even though you have to restructure internally, maybe there's a need, but you have to also look at the perceptions and balance that with the outside world.
I suspect somebody in Shell's marketing department possibly got a bit of a telling off for that one, at least in terms of kind of timings in that regard. But it's, you're right, it's about that consistency, isn't it?
Yes.
It's having that through line that the message is the same, and that, you know, you hold that in a leadership position particularly and hold others to accountable for that.
And I don't think just in a leadership position, I think everybody can do this. Everybody can set the example, and everybody can look at their own impact that they make in when they make decisions or when they do things in the workplace.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we see that here, I think, with our students. I mean, the expectations of students about the way in which we approach topics, the diversity of examples, the dialogue around, you know, leadership is a great example. We've been teaching our MSc students about, you know, principles and practice of leadership in recent years, and very conscious of the fact that still most of the rhetoric, the models, the exemplars are biased.
Yes.
Yeah, and you need to acknowledge that. You need to balance that out. You need to provide the narrative and the dialogue to allow them to approach that in the workplace as well.
Yeah, and even if you think you're very aware of those biases, I have an example of that as well. So I have a colleague, and we both work in HR, And he's a very sensitive guy, and he's very into creating a great culture in the workplace, and he's really focused on being inclusive. So, and he's the guy, you can imagine, always sending appraisals on time and having well thorough held conversations. And he was complaining to me a little bit about one of the people that he works with. So it was a direct colleague that never participated in any of the events that he put up. So, and he was a little bit fed up, and we had coffee with the three of us at some point. And he said, you know, yeah, but I don't understand why you never participate. And she felt very uncomfortable, and I could see that happening. And again, this was not a leadership position, or we had the no hierarchical, we all were at the same hierarchical level. And she said at some point, no, but, you know, I will participate next time. And I looked at her and I said, okay, but what makes you so uncomfortable? And she said, well, to be honest, despite being Dutch, despite being from a Western background, we never celebrated any of these things at home. So I'm actually just not aware how to behave. And that shows that even if you consider yourself very considerate and very inclusive, he never thought of her not having experienced any of these customs. And it was really, for me, it was really telling, because he prides himself very much on being aware and unbiased, but he failed to recognize that he still had his own assumptions and acted upon those.
Yeah, I mean, it broadens out the point, I think, but it's that, you know, part of that then is about, it's not just cultural sensitivity, it's social sensitivity,
yes,
isn't it? It's being mindful of all of those kind of dynamics and those differences in that regard. As somebody who's worked a bit in the Netherlands, you know, I used to make jokes about the difference between, you know, the British mindset and the Dutch, yeah, mindset, as a way of raising that in the conversation. In, you know, we've had some debates recently about timing of events.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a habit to run events as breakfast briefings. Yeah, that seems like a good time of day. You get people here before the start of the day, yeah, before they go into their office, and that's a good way to get engagement. The problem is that excludes people who might have other responsibilities at that time in the morning.
Yeah,
typically
definitely.
Childcare.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have to kind of balance those kind of expectations out. I guess that's all part of the same debate.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's where leaders also have the responsibility, even if they have a certain vision, to share that. And if their vision is to be inclusive, then they should also empower the people around them to act upon it. And when they say, well, look, I have this additional responsibility, empower them to provide a solution or to find different ways. And I think that's also one of the key things of responsible management, where you leave the responsibility with others as low as possible in an organization.
I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's base, BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast. So how does that then translate into HR practice? If you know, given your experience, your background, your great CV in this space, how do you make this work for a company like Universal?
I think a recent example where I did that is I was appointed as the head of HR, and I was the fifth manager in 2 years. It was a new role, and it was very difficult for people to actually to set up the role and to find its place in the organization. And there were 10 people in the team, and they all were struggling. They all they worked super hard, but the question was, did they do the right thing? And my approach was, okay, we should have a clear vision, a clear end goal. So this is where we want to go. This is our aspiration for the organization, and gave them all the freedom to design the actual road to get there. And one of the things I did in that is I had conversations with all of them and actually had to dismiss some person that was part of the team, worked really hard, did deliver, but in the end was not supporting the trust and the culture in the team. She was talking about other people's backs, etc. And it was a difficult conversation. It was a difficult conversation with my manager because she felt I was let go of somebody that was performing really well. But to me, being a responsible manager and setting the example means something different. It means you need to put your money where your mouth is. So you need to put, you need to say, okay, look, you do deliver on productivity, etc., but not on the actual interactions and the social engagement. And a second thing we did is in the team, we held responsible meetings. So once a week we had a team meeting and we only asked each other three questions. And that was, what did you do? What did you deliver? What are you due to deliver next week? How can I help you? And they were not allowed to ask any other questions, just these three. And what I saw happening is that it changed how they saw their own accountability. Because it, the question was no longer, okay, well, I have to perform, but it was, how do we do it together? Because the question is, how can I help you with that? And what you saw as a result within that HR team, using this approach, it became kind of a natural habit, a natural way of working. And they started to use that in the conversations they had with managers in the organization. So it kind of spread out. And that was very interesting to see.
So it's about creating that mindset then, isn't it? Distributing that back to that values-based perspective and saying, well, this is the way we're going to do things, and these are the benefits. Sticking kind of consistently to that and having that accountability. I was smiling as you said about having to dismiss somebody as part of that process because, yeah, I'm sure you've had it, you know, working in HR. People think HR is the sort of the soft, fluffy discipline.
Yes.
And it always, I always start with that, okay, when I get that from, particularly from students, say, okay, so who in this room's fired somebody? Yeah, or who in this room's had to deal with somebody who's been fired?
Yeah.
And they all suddenly look at their feet. Yeah, so, yeah, that high expectations, but managing the consequences, I guess, is key as well.
I agree with you. And it's about difficult conversations. And that for me is the hard part of HR. It's about being really sure of your direction, of your vision, and then act upon it. And those are the hard discussions because that's where you need to say, well, actually, I had a different expectation, or we didn't meet the deadline, or we didn't deliver, etc. And that I think is an underestimated part of HR for sure. And of course, HR does need to deliver in practice in terms of diversity and inclusion, employee well-being, development and growth. They can all be seen as the softer side, but it's actually the conversations underneath to actually develop people or to be inclusive. That is the difficult part.
So there's a set of underpinning principles, but then it's very much about the practice of how we manage.
Correct.
And hold people accountable to the values and the expectations that we might have as an organization.
Yeah.
The knowledge transfer network that underpins this podcast is largely made up of small firms. So as a university, do a lot working with kind of small businesses. So I just wonder about, you know, the challenges. Do the challenges change? Are they easier or harder? You know, if you're moving from a corporate setting to a maybe newer, more agile organization.
I don't think the challenges are different. Maybe the scope and the impact of challenges are different. I do think that it doesn't matter what the size is of your organization. It still goes about, are you able to translate the elements that underpin responsible management to your day-to-day decision making? And there are examples and cases that I'm aware of, you know, where that are similar in these different scope of organizations. Yeah, so I don't think it's that different.
So it's that fundamental mission statement, if that's the right phrase, about being clear and consistent and then demonstrating that practice. I guess one advantage of an SME might be you're closer to people.
Yes.
Yeah, but you've not got the same resource base. And, you know, if we think about some of those kind of classic fails of responsible management, where managers have clearly not behaved in responsible ways, you know, in corporate organizations, it feels like they've overemphasized distance and hierarchy. Mm. Yeah, as a consequence of that, I'm thinking you know, RBS here in the UK, Exxon in the States. Yeah, those kind of dynamics, I guess.
Yes, and I think when you give these examples, I immediately think about workload, for example. And I think workload, of course, workload in different organizations is perceived differently. But it does, there's a correlation, I think, between workload and sickness percentage in some cases. So if you have an increased workload and you have a manager that accepts that, regardless of the size of your organization, there might be higher sickness percentage, higher turnover rates, etc. And it doesn't matter what the size and the scope is of your organization, there are still solutions to deal with the workload. And even though in smaller SMEs, it may not mean that you can move a deadline as easily, you can still act upon it and you can still act responsibly to mitigate the workload.
So it's back to that thinking about people in a holistic way rather than it them just being factors of production. You know, I'm not a huge fan of the term human resources because we tend to overemphasize the second word.
Yes.
Yeah, and it sort of decontextualizes people from their life and everything else. Yeah, and we need to be, that's back to the responsible argument, isn't it? We need to be mindful of that.
Yes, and I 100% agree with you. I don't like the term human resource management either. No.
We need to think of a different, maybe go back to person, maybe not go back
maybe
to person.
Maybe people and culture.
People and culture. Well, yeah, that's that. Maybe you can start a movement for that in that regard.
Absolutely.
So, thinking practically, for anybody listening to us today, what would you want the key takeaways to be? What advice would you give?
I think my key advice is really look at your personal credibility. Where start from within yourself. Look at the organization that you work with. So, what are their values? How can you tap into those? And then, for HR professionals or leaders, then develop your actual output. Taking those elements both into account, have those difficult conversations. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be really hard. And that's what happened to me. I've upset a couple of people in my career along the way. Bound to happen. But don't go for the easy way out.
Yeah, you've got to be consistent, be forthright, and stick to your guns, I guess.
Yeah, lead by example.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Meryl. Final question, slight change of tack, and I'm conscious I'm springing this one on you a bit. We've been asking everybody who's contributed to the podcast series who their management hero or heroine might be. So that don't need to necessarily name the individual. That might be personal, it might be professional, it might be somebody you've read or those kind of things. But who's the person that's perhaps influenced you and kind of your practice?
Yeah, I think that's a colleague that I'm currently working with. He is the manager of a internal audit department, large responsibility, having recently listed at the stock exchange. And we had an issue of workload in his team. And he said to me, Meryl, I see my team. I see that they're struggling. And I'm not sure what to do because on the one hand, I have a board and shareholders that want me to deliver something, but I want to be responsible for my team and this is not working. I don't want to burn them out along the way. How can you help me? And that's when I saw that leadership and that comment that really made a difference for me because he saw the people, didn't see them as human resources, but really saw them as people, as his team. I supported him with an engagement survey to actually provide him with the data to underpin his business case and arguments to go back to the board. But that for me, the fact that he reached out to HR and said, look, I want to be a responsible manager.
Yeah, somebody willing to step up and to be responsible. Yeah,
yes.
And I particularly like that he came to ask for help.
Yes.
That's a good message, isn't it?
Yeah.
That actually for everybody, you don't have to do these things alone. Yeah, whether even if you're at even if you're an SME, use your network.
Yeah? Definitely,
Talk to people. Yeah, there are people out there that will be willing to help. Brilliant, Meryl. Thank you very much. Been really interesting and insightful. If people want to reach out to you, contact you, is the way they can do that?
Yeah, definitely. They can always send me a message on LinkedIn.
Thank you, Meryl. So, similarly, if you want to reach out to us here at the School of Management, the email is BACE, that's Business and Community Engagement, BACE@bradford.ac.uk. If you're following us on social media, it's at Brad Management or at Dave P. Spicer. Of course, if you've liked the podcast, please rate, please subscribe, and please leave us a 5-star review. Thank you very much, Meryl.
Thanks, Dave.
If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourselves. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at BACE, base@bradford.ac.uk.